Hi and welcome back to the show. Today I am joined once again by Valerie Bowden. She is the founder and CEO of Cradle. Valerie has a really interesting story. She's been on the podcast a couple of times, so you can go back and listen to the older episodes, but we do recap it here. She went on a crazy adventure through Africa and actually ended up spending many years there and has now built a business based on Africa talent or African talent. She spent many years in Ethiopia, but now sources offshore staff from many countries within the African continent. It's a wonderful story. And we talk a lot about the positive impact of Cradle, her business, but also outsourcing generally, and how this industry does positively impact the people and the communities and countries around it. So it's a great conversation about getting updates on Cradle and, of course, the positive impact of outsourcing. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. Just a quick announcement to tell you that the OA Outsourcing Impact Review 2024 is coming up later this year. The Outsourcing Impact Review, or OIR, is an annual study by Outsource Accelerator. That's us, the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. This project is at the forefront of redefining perspectives on outsourcing, a powerful but often misunderstood business tool. At its core, the OIR aims to recognize the remarkable impact programs led by outsourcing companies globally. The 2023 review and awards were an absolute hit. We announced the winners back in October 2023, and we're going to do that again this year, this October. So we are asking for nominations again for this year's entry, and any participants are welcome. If you are a part of the outsourcing industry and you do good within the community, whether it's a program or an outreach or charity or education or training or something like that related to your community, your employees regarding outsourcing, we want to hear about it. The OIR is all about documenting the good work that goes on in the outsourcing industry. So if you want to learn more, please go to impact.outsourceaccelerator.com. to learn more. There you can see the 2023 report. I encourage you to download that. And also you can submit any nominations. So again, that's impact.outsourceaccelerator.com. I suppose we can start by just, for those that haven't heard the first two appearances from you, just give us a quick rundown of Cradle and what you've been up to over the last couple of years with this amazing enterprise.
Awesome. Yeah. So Cradle is an outsourcing company and we hire anywhere in African countries and we plug them in mostly to like our US clients. And it's been really exciting to see win-win it creates, kind of changing a lot of Americans' perceptions about African countries and showing them like the amazing skill and the talent on the continent. And then also creates like a really strong social impact because we're creating jobs along the way. And we've been really lucky just to be growing like crazy since we launched about a year and a half ago. So it's, yeah, super exciting times for us.
That's amazing. And your own journey, you spent quite a number of years in Ethiopia. And of course, this was the cradle of the idea and the inspiration was to you then move back to the US. So what did you really see and discover in your time in Ethiopia and across Africa?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as an American, I did grow up with like the typical beliefs and stereotypes about the continent, associating it only with like charities and nonprofits. And then after college, you know, I was like young and adventurous. So I decided to do a backpacking trip across Africa. So I spent 7 months backpacking from South Africa to Cairo, Egypt. And that trip was incredible. And it was also like just a big eye opener to the fact that African countries are very diverse, very different from each other, and that they were not what I thought. And I saw so many young, talented professionals that were just crazy smart. And then after that trip, I got a job offer in Ethiopia. So I told my parents I would be gone just for 6 months. I ended up staying for 8 years. I came back to the US 2 years ago. But during that 8 years in Ethiopia, I got involved in outsourcing right around COVID time. And thankfully, that was kind of an industry that really took off during the pandemic. And the outsourcing showed me, you know, just what a win-win it is. Again, like creating jobs, it creates that social impact. But we were working with these huge clients in the US. But when I moved back to the US, I just realized like I wanted to do it a little bit differently, a little bit better. And that's when the idea of Cradle kind of started and I created my own outsourcing company. It's been really cool to do.
And outsourcing is nothing new, of course. It's been going around, you know, sort of 30 years now. But what is it like in Africa or Ethiopia specifically? Are people on the ground aware of the opportunities to tap into the global economy?
Right. I think the biggest challenge we always struggle with is that most American clients aren't aware that you can outsource to Africa. Nobody knows that like your best virtual assistant is in Ethiopia or your best cold caller is in Zimbabwe. So we have to spend a lot more time educating people that there are other places around the world that are great outsourcing hubs. But on the ground, there's actually tons of outsourcing happening. There's like huge Fortune 500 companies that are building teams and scaling. We primarily hire out of East Africa. So a lot of Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Zimbabwe are probably our most popular countries. And those we're seeing more and more young professionals really excited about the global talent economy. And our job really is just to get them that first interview. And we know that as soon as the US clients meet them, they're going to love them. And so we spend a lot of effort just trying to set up that first meeting. And from there, everything falls into place.
And you've just mentioned a lot of countries there, and I've just brought up the map of Africa. I mean, it's a ridiculously large place, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what's so cool is that they're so different from each other. So travel-wise, it's amazing, but even talent-wise, you see different strengths and skill sets. So when we want people with really good accents for cold calling, usually Ethiopia or Zimbabwe are some of our top favorites. If you want really good virtual assistants who probably have a little bit more experience, places like Kenya or Uganda, kind of it's a little bit easier to find. But we hire anywhere in Africa. So we just did an interview yesterday where we had someone from Nigeria on the interview, which is really fun. We're getting a lot of people from Gambia reaching out. So it's super exciting. And we're excited to hire more from other places on the continent as well.
And is there, you know, risking sort of oversimplifying the massive continent, but is there one sort of job board for the entire continent then? Or are you sort of, you know, reaching out to various countries for various different skill sets, as you said? Or how do you kind of connect with all of the African continent?
Great question. I think my desire to hire from the continent is because when I was in Ethiopia before I got into outsourcing, I was doing other business. And I remember I'd like apply for a grant and then I'd like look and see like, is Ethiopia on the list? And it's like, no, only taking applicants from Kenya. And it was so frustrating. And so when I started Cradle, I was like, I don't want to do that to anybody. So basically anyone who has, you know, good experience, good education can apply at Cradle. And even though we find some of the best accents out of Ethiopia, you know, sometimes we'll find the complete opposite and somebody from a different country we haven't hired from really surprises us. But in terms of who we hire, I think probably 50% of the people we hire recommend their friends and family. And so yeah, half the people we hire are friends with our current team members. So it creates like a cool family friend feeling. And then we just kind of spread through the countries like that.
And I suppose, you know, to one of the difficult questions is, what is the stability and reliability of the region like? I just listened to a podcast this morning about the war in Sudan, which wasn't there a couple of years ago. And now the country's back into sort of a war-torn state. Like, you know, and I know, of course, there's other countries that are far more stable and far more developed. But does that come into your calculations or the calculations of clients when they're sort of positioning themselves in the countries?
We haven't faced it, you know, too much, because a lot of times, even when there is conflict, first of all, it doesn't impact the other countries. So I know, like when I lived in Ethiopia, if something happened in Sudan, it had no bearing on Ethiopia. But I would say usually the capital cities where most of our team members are located are really safe and secure. So even recently, Ethiopia had some conflict and then we had no issues. There was no internet down, there was no power problems. And so I think, you know, most African countries are actually quite stable. And even when there is conflict, it doesn't reach the capital city as much. And at the end of the day, the governments want to see people working, especially young people. So there's a lot of incentives to keep things stable.
Good, good. So you were on the show relatively recently, and we got you back to really discuss the outsourcing impact review. We do an annual report every year, and you are one of the winners for the 2023 OA Outsourcing Impact Award for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And so You know, I want to discuss your perspective. From what I understand, this is a big driver, a big motivator for you and a large part of your purpose for Cradle. But what is your perspective on the positive impact of outsourcing? And, you know, is it all positive or are there pros and cons to it? Like, how do you see the whole outsourcing thing if it's kind of magnified 100 times?
First of all, thank you again so much. We were beyond thrilled when we won that. And since we won that award, we've had, I think, USAID, GIZ, and some other funding and grants have reached out to us about our social impact. Wow. Oh, yeah, I can't say thank you enough for that. And to answer your question, so my background is actually in social work. So again, another reason why I first came to the African continent was because I thought I'd end up like in the nonprofit sector. And then I realized if people have jobs, you don't need donated clothes or donated food. And especially, I mean, I think everyone in general, but especially the young people, they just want to work. They want to have careers. They want to get paid good money. They don't want handouts. So that's really why I got into outsourcing, because you can create jobs so much quicker than probably any other sector. You know, overnight, we might get a request from a client to add 50 new people or 100 new people, and that's 100 new jobs that we create overnight. And so I think the social impact is fabulous. And I know there's a lot of research and statistics about it, but for our end, we get the most heartwarming messages from the people we hire, from somebody who was going to have to leave their family to go and work. They're able to stay with their kids now because they have a job where they work remote through Cradle. We have a lot of people who in the day they go to grad school and then at night they work for our US clients or they help pay for their younger brother or sister to go to school. And so, yeah, it's just endless. So I personally think it's all great social impact because it's creating jobs. I would say within that outsourcing industry, there's better examples of like the more you pay, I think the better the social impact. You can create better work culture. So I think there's a lot of gray area that still happens in outsourcing that we can make better. But in general, I think it's a really positive thing.
And where do you see the blend of, you know, the sort of sweet spot of, are people doing this for positive impact? You know, is it, I suppose, even to the extreme, is this sort of a charitable contribution or is this a commercial engagement? And do they expect the same sort of standards of productivity and with this engagement? So how do you kind of balance those different tensions or interests, I suppose?
I think the most important thing is it has to have a business ROI. And in fact, as we've grown, I would say our best clients could probably care less about this social impact and they don't come to us to make a difference. Like that's the truth. And that really just shows you how much talent is on the continent, that people really are doing it as a smart business move. And even our clients who do care about the social impact, they would not continue to hire and pay from us or pay us if it wasn't creating the business impact. So I think what we're doing is awesome in terms of social impact. But I would say that the more we focus on social impact in Africa, it almost has a negative impact, because if you think of Africa in terms of trying to help it, you don't realize that your best virtual assistant or your best cold caller, your best customer service team comes from the continent. So the more and more I do this, the more I try and speak just about the business ROI. And then on the back end, secretly, I'm super happy about all the jobs we're creating and how well we're paying. But it at the end, it has to be a business decision, I think.
It's an interesting tension, isn't it? Because you want these people to stand up on their own merits. And of course they do. And you know, you want them to compete in a whatever, like a transparent market. Like they've got to be able to stand on their own two feet and compete. And of course they can, you know, and that's the incredible thing. And that really speaks to the incredible opportunity, isn't it? And so it's kind of, I suppose, emphasizing that. And then as a bonus, you're doing a great thing for an entire continent or country or community. It's pretty powerful stuff.
I think I speak a lot about the social impact because I secretly hope that funders will provide more grants either for Cradle or for other outsourcing companies or just in the industry as a whole. I think there's a lot of ways that a lot of the aid money that's going to Africa, I think if you did it in a smarter way and helped these African professionals with the things that they need, it would be helpful. Like, for example, we have a lot of people who will apply for us and then they don't have a good working laptop. So it's like, how do we hire you for a job where you need your laptop? Like, how do you get a laptop if you don't have money to pay for it? So there's things like that where I think funding should come in, which is why I love talking about the social impact, because I hope more organizations realize that they should be involved in this area. But yeah, at the end of the day, we get clients through talking about the results that we bring them.
Yeah, it's again, it's that sort of poverty trap, isn't it, that you're trying to sort of get people out of. If people have access to internet connection and stable electricity and then of course hardware so that they can be productive and tap into the global economy, then it really kind of opens up opportunities, doesn't it? And education, yeah, to a degree. Like, where, how are you seeing the education piece? Are these people sort of educated, capable, ready to go, or are you finding that, you know, if they haven't engaged in the sort of Western economy and the pace of it and the professionalism of it, do they take a little bit of warming up to, you know, the global standard, I suppose?
The cool thing about African countries is that for decades, the governments have been investing in education of their youth. So now you get these fantastic college grads who have great experience, great education, good English. And then specifically at Cradle, I think our model's a little bit differently. So we are not the first touch point. We hire people who have previously worked for international companies. And that's for a few reasons. First, because we found our clients don't want to be the ones training them, you know, and because we're a smaller team still, we don't have the bandwidth to do some of that initial training. What we found is that there's a lot of Fortune 500 companies that hire from the continent, but the pay is super low and there's no good benefits. And so what we do is we allow them to get that experience. And then when they're ready to move on, and have probably maybe like a better career path, that's when they come to Cradle. So the ones we get are super trained. They're used to working with the US companies. So that's kind of specifically been our model, and it's been really successful for us.
Yeah, and that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's very difficult. You know, I've been living in the Philippines 10 years, and the magic has happened with outsourcing, and it's been an incredible economic boon. And it's hard to calculate now because it's been interwoven into the Philippine economic miracle for the last 30 years. So it's really difficult to sort of unpick how much is attributed to outsourcing, but certainly, you know, it contributes 12% to the GDP today. And then there's all of the sort of secondary benefits, such as all of the buildings of the cities and the restaurants and all of the peripheral economic activity. So it's just absolutely profound. But what you also find now in the Philippines, it's almost reached a new equilibrium where employment is at it's saturated. So unemployment levels are very low. It's very difficult to find the staff you want because they're all employed, and it's very difficult to keep them because they can job hop because there is such a demand. So, you know, it's almost they're now becoming a bit of a victim of their own success because it's so mature, it's done so well. And I see the big opportunities is for these emerging new entrants to the offshore market where, you know, typically, you know, and again, I'm generalizing about the entire continent, but unemployment levels are high. People are maybe eager for these jobs and, you know, willing to work hard from them. Is that sort of a generalization? I mean, what are you seeing on the ground? Are people kind of thrilled to get these jobs, or is it kind of ho-hum, they're used to the whole outsourcing vibe now and it's just another gig kind of thing?
No, I agree with what you're saying. And actually, we've had quite a few like outsourcing BPO companies from the Philippines and India reach out to us wanting to white label, kind of saying that same issue you've had where it's harder and harder for them to find talent, where in the African continent, you know, a billion people with so, you know, like a generally high young population that want to work. And so, yeah, what we found is there's so many people who want jobs. And then when they are working for a U.S. company, it's the pinnacle, right? So they're so excited to finally get into a U.S. company that the retention rate is really, really high. And that's another reason why there's just like good ROI from hiring from the African continent is because when you get someone and you train them and you put them into a good system, like they're not going to leave you. They're going to stay with you and do a really great job. And the turnover rate is really low, which is really cool to see.
No, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, and I think that's where in anything in life, that's where the sort of younger, smaller upstarts, they get the leg up compared to the incumbents, you know, like, and that means that these newer, younger countries, they can work a little bit harder and try a little bit harder and gain ground on the incumbents, which is like the Philippines and India that have been, you know, having this success for the past 20, 30 years. And also what I find intriguing now as well is, you know, it's a well-trodden path because 30 years ago when there was no cloud, internet was new, you had to sort of set up servers and this whole thing was kind of experimental. Now it's like, you know, this thing's 30 years old, everything's in the cloud, you can kind of turn on infrastructure, pay as you go. And these countries are seeing the benefit of tapping into the global economy. And that, you know, I've been contacted by a lot of these emerging markets and they're all like, we want a piece of this, you know. And there's there's such a clear pathway, isn't there? You've just got to get your workforce to some level of capability, have relatively good communication, have basic hardware, and then they can start tapping into the global economy. So there's a very sort of defined pathway now for them.
Yep, exactly. And I was reading actually like the Outsource Accelerator newsletter about, I think you guys did an article recently about Nigerian government trying to make it even easier for people to hire from Nigeria, remote team members. And it was because like in your article, it said, because there's more potential in the outsourcing sector than any other sector. And so I think more and more African governments are realizing that and doing everything they can to help their people get these jobs. And then, yeah, the pandemic, like, you know, remote work is so common and so easy to do now that the barrier to entry is lower. And yeah, definitely like an exciting time. And it's easier now than ever before to do outsourcing.
A lot of these countries, and again, generalizing, but generally this is pretty true, I think, of emerging economies, they're really complex to navigate. It's really difficult to set up over there, incorporate, employ people. You know, there's crazy kind of red tape and regulation and, you know, potentially corruption as well. How do you navigate that and still run a sort of, you know, commercial enterprise that needs to be reliable and stable and that sort of stuff? Are you able to sort of, you know, avoid a lot of that on the ground complexity?
I would say, again, that's why people probably come to us, like US companies come to us, because they don't want to deal with the complexity of hiring from African countries, and for good reason. I mean, even just paying our team members is quite a pain. You know, we're constantly getting flagged. We have to prove that we're not laundering, money laundering. You know, it's not easy to pay people in Africa, which is really unfortunate. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we have a really good team that is on the back end working to make sure we do this right. But it's not easy. And that's kind of the negative thing. But it is possible at the end of the day. But yeah, it's business in African countries is a little bit more complex. So I hope that's one thing that gets better in the future.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I think that's probably your moat to some extent. And like the friction is the opportunity as well. Like, you know, it used to be really hard to do business in the Philippines and India 30 years ago. And now it's just everything's so simple because everything's in the cloud and, you know, people can sort of pay people online and all that sort of stuff. And so there is no friction. So there's less and less opportunity there now, which is good, of course. But it's funny, isn't it, how where the friction is, there's kind of the opportunity. And also, you know, it's a shame for the billion people, as you say, because they're kind of, you know, they don't have much of a domestic economy to participate in, and they're not able to physically travel outside of that economy. And then also the infrastructure means they're kind of locked within the economy, you know. And so at least if you can provide that digital sort of conduit out of that economy into the global economy, then that's an amazing kind of release valve, isn't it? That's the opportunity.
Yeah, that's what I love about what we're doing, is that we are giving people access to jobs. I know we've had a lot of team members who applied, you know, to work for a US company on their own. And then as soon as the HR hears Africa, they're like, oh, thank you. So, like, we're not going to hire anybody from Ethiopia. And that's like the really sad thing. And so, like, again, like, that's what we work at Cradle so hard is to help people who traditionally would get turned down because of their location actually get a job. And then again, they earn it based on their hard work and their skills. Once they get the job, they do fantastic. But getting them to that point and then making sure the back end part is smooth and that we can pay them and all of that is definitely still a headache.
How do you sort of deal with that? Do you find that it is harder to convince someone they should hire an African versus, you know, someone from the Philippines or India? Because like the Philippines now, for better or worse, it has significant presence in the market and people kind of understand the concept of hiring a Filipino VA or remote worker. And the concept isn't so familiar when you say hire someone from Ethiopia. And do you find there is that resistance there that you have to really push against?
Yes. Most of what we do is just trying to educate people that you can hire from Africa. I know that we have a lot of clients who, you know, they hired from like Latin America because the time zone was the same. And we have to be like, you know, we really have to say no, like the people we are hiring really don't mind the 9 to 5 EST shift. In fact, like that's actually quite doable and preferred on their end. So Yeah, there's a lot of education we have to do. And so that's why we always, I mean, we push people to do the interviews, because we know that once we meet them during the interview, you feel this like magic where you sense how the candidate really resonates with the client. But to get to that point is a lot of work. And that's why I post every single day on LinkedIn trying to share these facts and help people. But I would say that, you know, I've been in the outsourcing in Africa industry for over 6 years now. So when I started, it was harder. And now more and more, I'm getting people who have hired from the continent and it was a positive experience. And so now they want to build and expand their teams. And that's why they come to us. So I think it's slowly coming along, but it's not fast by any means.
And you're a for-profit company, which I think is brilliant. And, you know, you spoke previously about sort of having a very strong purpose, but still doing things on a commercial basis. And, you know, I think that that's just brilliant. And the proof's in the pudding, because you're now hiring, you know, dozens and dozens of people and giving them proper, sustainable commercial careers, which is brilliant. But how do you find the aid agencies? You know, it's interesting that you're saying a few of them are sniffing around now and kind of exploring outsourcing as this opportunity. But how do you think it sits with them, this sort of, you know, it's not a handout, it's not a charity, it's actually a true commercial engagement, and there's no running away from that. But are they kind of on board with that, and could they help fund to proliferate that? What are you sort of hearing from there?
I don't think they're coming on board as fast as they should be, or providing as much support as they could be. I think that will change over time. I think there's this idea that outsourcing takes jobs away from Americans. And so you see, even if USAID is interested in supporting outsourcing to Africa, and even if they realize that it's not taking jobs away from America, the general perception in the US [S2] Right. [S1] Is that that's true. So that limits it a little bit. And I think there's a lot of charities that really still focus on, you know, individually helping, you know, a certain company or a certain startup. And so there's a lot of competition to get that funding. Where my general belief is, we should just make it easier to hire from the continent in a way that helps everybody. So providing financing for equipment that anybody with an outsourced job can get would be more helpful than specifically helping one company alone. Or Ethiopia just got Safaricom, which is like the second internet like alternative in the country. And that has been super helpful for our team members. So I think there needs to be more funding that can just really uplift everyone instead of focus on individual grants towards one-off organization, if that makes sense.
It's a really interesting point you made, in that it's never going to be that popular, is it, doing outsourcing and proliferating, you know, because there is this sense of, you know, they are taking our jobs, which is always kind of controversial, isn't it? Which is a shame, because it's not actually the case. But that takes a lot of education, and you're probably not going to get, you know, many charities sort of raising donations to have American jobs taken away. So that's interesting.
I really struggle with when people ask what I do. You know, sometimes I say outsourcing, and then I can just see it on their face that they're not, like, that didn't bode well with them. If I say staffing, that kind of seems boring, especially when everything we do is like kind of so complex and involved. If I say I create jobs in Africa, I don't love that, because again, it doesn't really focus on the cool business ROI that we do have. So I would love to find like either like a different name to describe what we do, or hopefully the term outsourcing will become just have a better, you know, reputation, and people will have a better understanding. But yeah, every day I struggle to say exactly what we do to people who don't know or haven't heard about us before.
Yeah, look, I've searched for a long time to find the right name for outsourcing, because outsourcing, you know, you don't really outsource. Well, I suppose you do, because you're kind of managing the process a little bit, but it's more staff augmentation, isn't it? Because they're working shoulder to shoulder with the clients onshore. And, you know, I sort of think of outsourcing as more the traditional call centers, where they're doing debt collection or whatever CS sort of functions. Yeah, and it's really difficult to get a word that really encapsulates the industry. I call it kind of staff augmentation, but then that's not really particularly sexy either.
Sometimes I go like the longer route and I say like I help small and medium businesses access affordable talent, or I help people find really awesome remote team members, and those remote team members happen to live a little farther away than the rest of your remote team members. But yeah, we need to come up with something that's a better name for it, or a better description.
Yeah, it's not easy, because some people completely understand, but a lot of people, if you say outsourcing, then they think it might be manufacturing, you know, like you're in China making children's toys or something.
Right. Yeah. And really what we've seen, like when outsourcing is done right, it actually creates stronger companies, stronger economies, like in the US. You know, one of the things we do most is like sales rep, cold calling, and appointment setting. And so whether you work with us or just like any other company that does that, if you plug in those remote team members who are doing cold calling, which is like a volume game, you don't want US salaries to be doing that. They create so many qualified appointments for your internal sales team that all of a sudden your employees are making more, your business is making more, there's more profit, more revenue. And so that just shows you like what a win-win it is. And it's not scarcity. Like you hired someone in Africa, so you're not hiring someone in the US. If you plug it in and do it right, it creates like abundance for everybody.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, there's so much pushback against this kind of global commerce. Yet, you know, people have been outsourcing manufacturing to China for the last sort of 50 years. And pretty much the American economy is built on it. And every single product in Walmart and, you know, Hermes is from China pretty much. So kind of if it's a person doing the work, then that's really controversial. Whereas, you know, Chinese made products, that's fine. That's just natural. So there is this kind of double standard. And people just don't like seeing the people doing the work instead of an American kind of thing. And, you know, we get enormous pushback. Like we get, because we do a lot of marketing and advertising, we get told we're terrorists and criminals and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And if you think about it, like, I don't grow my own food. I don't make my own clothes. You know, like there's a lot of things you outsource. Essentially, that's what it is, right? So you recognize that it doesn't make sense to me. And you know that saying, like, AI won't take your job, but the person who knows AI will? Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like it's something similar. Like, you know, outsourcing won't take your job, but the person who knows how to, you know, have a hybrid model and work with people in emerging economies and plug them into the right functions in your business, like, that's the person you should be scared of. Like, the person who can run a remote team. But I don't think outsourcing in itself will take anyone's job.
And I just, you know, my whole concept is global employment. And I just, it's completely inevitable. My perspective is it's completely inevitable that the world will eventually converge into one market, one economy. You know, and when we're talking about the sort of positive impact of this, it's, gosh, it's got to help when, you know, these poor countries that have previously been cut off from sort of viable economic activity, that they're now sort of able to access it. And that's just a huge opportunity for these countries and communities. It seems inevitable that, you know, we've been sourcing internationally for the last 50 years, and it just seems inevitable that eventually companies will source their staff globally, especially now that, you know, most people are kind of into the remote groove and accepting of remote and things like that. It's there just seems this inevitability about it. And then, so, you know, it becomes, you know, can you really use the sort of inefficient model just because you're kind of feel it's better for your community? Like, you've really got to go with the efficient model, haven't you?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, yeah, I do see that's like where the future is heading as well. And if I look at the US, I think the Biden administration promised $6 billion in US aid to the African continent. And you think if people actually just had access to good jobs, would all that aid even be necessary? And maybe that aid money could be repurposed for something else, or, you know, so there's just a lot of inefficiency where we are spending money for things that, you know, if there was a true business, you know, model for it, maybe that money wouldn't be needed and there'd be a more sustainable way out of poverty too.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, $6 billion is a lot of money, and it never seems to plug any gaps, does it? It seems like a leaking bucket. Like, you just put in $6 billion every year, and like, what does it do? It's unbelievable. Yeah? Whereas if, you know, that is in venture building and building similar companies and supporting Cradle and getting people their own sort of economic activity, gosh, that's powerful, isn't it?
Huge. Yeah. It'd be massive.
And how are you seeing any AI, like, are people asking you about AI, or, you know, you feel that doesn't sort of touch your roles too much?
No, it does. Actually, we had one client, they were using our Ethiopian cold callers, and then they actually moved our cold callers up to closers, and they used AI for the entry-level calling, which was really crazy, the first experience we've had. But again, then it helped our team members because they were doing the closing, they could earn more commissions, they were able to reach more people. So that was kind of our first, I guess, real experience with it. In many ways, I still, you know, because AI still isn't perfect, it kind of helps us. You know, I I would say like chatbots are still really frustrating for the average customer. So we would say like, you know, if you want to actually help team members on the entry level, tier one level, then you use our team members for that instead of AI. So we're somewhat, you know, we talk against it a little bit, but we have a lot of, you know, VAs and people who use ChatGPT for help with their work. And they know you can't just copy and paste from it, but you can use it to help you. So I think AI is going to help more emerging economy, you know, plug into the global talent economy better.
And just in terms of costs, Valerie, like we don't have to go into dollars and cents, but with the, you know, huge diversity of the American continent and the countries within it. And I imagine it's terrible to think, but there's fairly established economies where the average expected salary is fairly reasonable. And then some economies where, you know, a dollar a day is an absolute blessing. Like, how do you find sort of significant variance within the kind of countries or the pools that you're sourcing from? Or do you find that, you know, a certain skill level and capability level kind of has a more standardized baseline, if that makes sense, across the different countries?
We have seen that. When I hire someone at Cradle, I want them to be ecstatic about our pay rate. So we want it to be like a significant increase in their salary. And so that means places like South Africa, we generally don't hire from, because South Africa does have a significantly higher cost of living. Whereas in Ethiopia, where we hire, you know, people are making 5 to 8 times as soon as they work with us. We have a friend who lives in Gambia, and he's been really trying to get me to hire more people from there. And, you know, their cost of living is even lower there. And again, that's the benefit of outsourcing, is you can pay super fair wages that are less than a US person, but are crazy good in the places you're hiring from. So that's another reason why we hire more from East Africa, because Southern Africa or even some of the Western African countries are a little bit harder to be competitive in.
Amazing. Valerie, thank you so much. It's been incredible to touch base again. And, you know, you're doing so well. And I see you all across LinkedIn. You're doing amazing on LinkedIn and getting really fantastic support there. So how's that going, actually? Like, how is your LinkedIn journey?
Oh, man. LinkedIn has been huge for us. It's so funny. I read a book on how to do LinkedIn better. And I changed my whole entire LinkedIn approach based on this book. And then probably 70% of our customers come in through LinkedIn, because you're able to skip the gatekeepers, the HR, and connect directly to the CEOs who get what we're doing differently. And so, yeah, LinkedIn for us has been huge. So I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn.
Yeah, we've done well. Like, it's really difficult to get any traction on LinkedIn. So, you know, you are certainly getting great responses. So, yeah, it's been incredible to see you grow that audience, and congratulations. So, Valerie, thank you so much. Thanks for joining me again, and well done on your growth and, you know, again, the incredible impact you are making to those communities. It's amazing. And at the same time, you're growing an amazing business. So it is really a win-win, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Coming from you, it means so much. So thank you.
And as always, we encourage people to reach out and have a conversation. So if they want to learn more about Cradle or get in touch, how can they do that?
Of course, they can go to my LinkedIn to connect with me directly, or just head to our website, cradle.com.
Fantastic. And I'll put those links in the show notes. Thank you so much. That was Valerie Bowden. She is the founder and CEO of Cradle. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, then just drop some email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.